Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. My name is Alexi. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Alexia.
Will everybody please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'm delighted to see the room full today. And I want to ask you, so the name of this workshop, just to for those of you who are here, you want to make sure that you're in the one that you're in the right place. It's the title of it is Food, Relationships, and Money, Practicing These Principles in All Our Affairs. Are you in the right place? So let me ask, I'm going to ask three questions. For those of you who's here for the food element? Okay, who's here for the relationship element? All right, and who's here for the money element? And who's here for all of the above? All right, you're in the right place. So this panel came about because in my recovery, I always have to look at, and it took a while. I've been in the rooms for almost 13 years. What blocks the sunlight of the spirit? And that is an open-ended question. And what I've learned through working the tools of CEA How is, especially with the weighing and the measuring, that I can't be vague. And vagueness equals drama. That's just my experience. And that can be with obviously my food. I feel really, really blessed to have that gift of measuring and having boundaries on my food. And then I also, through that, learn to have boundaries with people and then also in my money. So we've put together this panel. And we have Dave, we have Mary, and we have Sue. I know them all very well, and I am very, very blessed to that they all said yes and that they're here to share their experience, strength, and hope on this topic with you. So the second part of the panel being food, relationships, and money is practicing these principles in all our affairs. So what are the principles of CEA How? Does anybody know? What are the principles of CEA How? All right, honesty. I would say the steps are a big part of the principles of this program. Who would agree with that? They're suggested. They're requirements. Okay.
Traditions.
Okay. So I want to read to you the steps before we begin. That step number one is we admitted that we were powerless over food, compulsive overeating, and that our lives had become unmanageable. Step number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I'm going to back up with step number one. That's being honest, honesty, correct? And number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That would be hope. Step number three, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Faith. Step number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Courage. Step number five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Integrity, maybe, huh? And then step six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Maybe willingness. We could say that could be step six, huh? And step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Humility. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. That's brotherly love. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Justice. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. That's perseverance. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. That's the spirituality of our program. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening of the result of these steps, we try to carry the message to others, especially other compulsive eaters, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And what's step 12? And carrying the message. I heard something else. Spiritual awakening. And what about service? Okay, so I think very good. Thank you for your input. I appreciate that. So what we're going to do is we're going to have each panelist speak on their topic of that we have here today, food, relationship, and money. They're going to speak for 20 minutes each, and then we're going to open up the discussion for a Q&A afterwards. And Dave, are you willing to take it away?
Absolutely.
And
Dave
is really being willing. And Dave, how would you like your time?
What?
How would you like your time?
10, 5, and 5.
Rocio is our trusted timer today, so she'll give you some signals.
So, just take it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Alexia. Thank you all for showing up. Thank you for letting me participate in my recovery. My name is David, and I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. You know, one of the things that I'd like to look at for me is really about relationships. And it's my relationship with food that brought me into the program. And it's, you know, my relationship to money, my relationship to with others, my relationship with, you know, myself. And that's the thing that I have to grapple with on a daily basis. And the more that I take inventory, the more that I get involved in the steps and get honest, and that I become open-minded, that there is a solution beyond what's going on in here. Because this, I've learned, is a very dangerous place. It severely can put me... got me where I was going. It got me 85 pounds heavier than I am right now. I'll qualify. I've been in the program for 6 years, 11 months, and today is the 27th, so that is the 15th of next month. I actually got into the program a day before my 40th birthday. And I don't know if you guys remember Roger. He used to have the bow tie. Yeah. And several other people had mentioned this program to me. And he was so wonderful to me because I was so beat down with the food. And I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand, but once again, that's my mind. And then when we read the doctor's opinion, we find out that I have a obsession of the mind coupled with an allergy of the body. And that we've found in this program that basically is a spiritual solution. So, I want to also acknowledge how I got into this program. I want to thank the 14 Pacific Division police officers who got me into it. I'm a very entrepreneurial food addict. And I remember being, you know, 4, 5, 6, and having those doughy things. I have I'm from Italian descent, so I like doughy, big things. I like to eat massive amounts of things and just like and feed myself into a coma. And that's what I do. That's what my brain, you know, tells me comfort wise. And then when I look at that, was my relationship with myself. What is it? You know, and then when I go back to where it took me, and you know, by the way, I want to acknowledge the speaker last night. She was so great. Oh, there were so many parts of her story that once I look at the similarities, I mean, there are so many similarities. I mean, I was not a thin Crystal meth user. I wasn't. I knew where all the fast food places were, and it's just delusional thinking that I was able to control my food. And also, I've been teaching aerobics for about 30 years. I started out with doing martial arts in high school, but then I went to teaching aerobics, and you know, I never really thought of money. I guess, you know, I have this dream thinking, I have this fantasy thinking around money, and but you know, for one reason or another, I was able to be able to teach and be able to make money, and I was definitely a bulimic exerciser. I would teach 8 classes a week. I'd be riding down from Santa Monica, my bike down to Palos Verdes and back 5 times a week on average. And that obsession, you know, the speaker was talking about that. I was like, oh, my God. And I used to teach over Jane Fonda's, and my supervisor over there was Jeannie from Body Buddies that she was talking about. And it was like, do-do-do-do-do. But you know, I want to get back to the relationships today. I actually have a wife. I have a wife that I can maintain relationships, and I have a daughter here. She's 18 months old. Oh my God, I love her so much. I never thought. And, you know, I could get around. And you know, if I was 85, 100 pounds, I was pre-diabetic. And I just beat my body up. I ate myself into oblivion. And I couldn't believe how this worked. And that, you know, I was listening to the last panel, and there were some questions. And they were talking about, well, do you bring an exercise? My sponsor at the time, Roger, said to me, I don't want you to exercise. I want you, you know, maybe walk, because I have the potential to try to balance, because I'm really trying to find balance. And let's say that relationships can mean anything. My relationship with Jay, my relationship, you know, with Sue. My relationship with Sue. My relationship with Alexia. With all of you. You know, it, or my relationship with money. It's my relationship. And if I have a lack of love and I have a lack of acceptance, my balance is off. And I kind of had this meditation. It's like, I need a laboratory to do what I do. I really do. And maybe this is part of me. You know what? I don't know, but I'm just going to kind of say it. I need a laboratory to do what I do. I used to have this dance studio that I used to play music and dance around. Somehow it worked out, but it didn't work out anymore. I'm a little older. I can't wear the spandex and the leg warmers anymore. I cut my hair. Anyways, So lab came up from the meditation, this lab thing. Love, accept, I guess I'm dyslexic. So love, acceptance, finding balance. And I've been doing general service in another program. But basically, what happens is that service structure comes down, and it works so amazingly well that the inverted triangle, which is, you know, in different, in it's the feminine energy. And I actually have a relationship sponsor, Patricia A., and she actually just had me read the, if you have a relationship with your family, the family afterwards, it's amazing how, you know, that those 364 pages really bring us back. But that acceptance is the key to all my problems today. And that love, do I love or do I hate? And, you know, I work at a, you know, I this morning I work at a gym. And that's, you know, but, you know, I look at some of the people at the gym, and I can only see this because I can see it in myself, my lack of love for self. And that relationship is like I hate myself, so I beat myself up, and I overexercise, and I overdo this, and I overdo that. And how I'm trying to be a little easier on myself today. And because when I can be easier on myself today, I can be easier with you. And, you know, my relationship with my wife has been, it's not always easy to be married. It's hard, you know, and to have a relationship because, you know, we're not always balanced, back to that balance thing. And it's like, where's my lack of acceptance from my wife in that situation? Or, you know, my lack of, I can't do this because I don't, you know, I don't know what's in my bank account. Unclarity. You know, lack of honesty about what's really going on. And that's what the H-O-W, you know, I love it. You know, I love this program for what it's taught me, and that you guys have walked with me. And I think that's about it for right now. If there's questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. We now have Mary, and we're looking forward to hearing your experience, strength, and hope. Mary, how would you like your time?
10 and 5. I'm Mary. I'm a recovering compulsive eater.
Mary.
And I share many other addictions with many of you here. And first of all, I had planned certain things in my mind to say today, and then this morning I went to the emotional sobriety workshop, and it kind of blew me away. Some of the things that came to mind. And, you know, actually one of the emotions, not only did that group have a nice handout with the emotions on it, they also had the kind of the physical response that accompanies an emotion. And one of them was love, and one of the physical things was lightness of feeling and fluttering. I feel light, which means I must be feeling a lot of love here today. So I thank everybody for being here, and I just feel like I could sit in a room with all of you for a long, long time and just let it all wash over me. I really am thirsty for this. I'm very familiar with the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. For 34 years, I have been involved in 12-step programs. However, I did not come to the food and the relationship program very easily. And actually, I didn't come to any of them easily. I came kicking and screaming to most of them. But I guess the one thing they all share in common is that I had just given up. And I guess that's surrender. It was only a surrender insofar as I did not know where else to turn. I had, like, reached the dark woods, and I couldn't find my path out. I felt alienated, frightened. Anyway, you know, a lot of those emotions that were on the list, and one of them was abandonment, and I hadn't really thought about my feelings of abandonment as a kid. But I'm 66 years old, and when I was 11 months old, my mother had twins. And I was no longer a baby. I felt like I became an administrative assistant. And when I look at family photos, and my father used to take home movies, I was like sitting there, kind of like Alexia is doing now, overseeing the activities, and probably mad as hell. And abandonment is huge. Huge for me. I'm not saying if it hadn't been abandoned, I wouldn't have become a drunk or a compulsive reader or, you know, this or that. But, you know, those are the things that feed into what I become. What I became was a really miserable person. And if it hadn't been for my misery, I would not know all of you. So I'm grateful for the fact that I had what I had. I'm going to back up a little and start with the food, because this is really the food and the relationships really came together very nicely for me, if you want to put it that way. But one of the things I picked up today, and I had never seen this before, was this... the 12 traditions in how. And whenever I'm looking at my relationships with other people, I try to get a good description of traditions again, because they bring me back to how I'm interacting with people. And we've heard a number of things in workshops. The last workshop was awesome about talking about gossip. And how that might affect a group and how that tradition impacts me. It says in Tradition 7, each group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And then the guide takes a look at how that affects me on a personal level. And it says here, food addicts have a tendency to be all or nothing people. When have I been all or nothing? Have my attitudes about money and spirituality also gone to extremes? You know, I can't think of anything better than shopping and eating. Those were my default activities when I stopped the beverage thing. I can remember going to certain meetings in San Francisco where I knew what kind of food they had. And if they didn't have the right kind of food, well, I would always be the person that brought the things, the round things. I always signed up for that commitment. And I made sure that it was all set out nice, you know. And I was very critical of any person who took that commitment and didn't do it nice. Then I would spend. In 1979, I was in Union Square in San Francisco, and I knew every department store in the square. And if I had a job interview coming up, boy, I was in there. And one time I had a doubleheader. I was in a dressing room at Macy's, and not only was I shopping up a storm, they were bringing you lunch if you had a personal shopper. So it was like, wow, this is what life's about. And I was one of the people that would go to the beverage program, and you know, talk about my experience, strength, and hope in terms of paying off an $800 credit card bill. That is not exactly what I think they had in mind, Bill W. and the others, about recovery. And because it was no sooner that I would stand up and feel proud of myself. Who feels proud of themselves for paying a bill? A compulsive debtor. And it was no sooner than, you know, all of that happened that I started noticing that that's kind of how the kind of person I was. I had sponsors in Berkeley who would suggest, number one, that I look at my sugar intake because I seem to be highly emotional. And number two, maybe we should try to think of having a budget group. Well, this was before we heard of the money program. So it had been, you know, the signs were on the road, and I did what I could to ignore them. I have not. And, you know, it's funny. A funny thing with our addictions, it is so easy to rationalize them because we all have such great imaginations. There is a reason to do whatever you want to do in life. And, you know, the hell with the consequences. Anyway, all I can say is that to me there's just an intimate relationship between food, money, relationships. All right, so my relationships, you can imagine, weren't always exceptional because you cannot eat that much sugar, you cannot be spending money and not be anxious and temperamental. And, you know, God knows, it took me, my first marriage ended after 5 years. It was an alcoholic marriage, not a good way to go. And then I came back to the United States. I'd been living in New Zealand for 9 years. Oh, yeah, and that was the other thing I heard this morning. Escape routes? Mine was to New Zealand. I found somebody, a New Zealander, and I liked his accent. And we got on a boat. 9 years later, I'm divorced. And it was... You know, I was coming back to America to find myself. And you know what? Within 9 months, I was in the beverage program. Thank God. Thank God that I had the willingness to go to a program and that my life had become so unmanageable. I had no job. I had no interest in working. I wanted someone to take care of me. And you know what? I was really disappointed that those people in that program didn't want to take care of me better. But I still hung out with them. And many of them are still my friends today because of their actually acceptance. Anyway, 15 minutes is up. So I'm going to get on with the... Okay. 5 minutes left to tell you about how I... connected all this with relationships. 6 years ago, I got married. I met someone in program. And, you know, a program person is not always the, you know, it's not a marriage made in heaven. And that assumption has gotten a lot of people in trouble. So, anyway, the two of us went to therapy in Pasadena for a while, and you know, we were going over, it was like a broken record. You know, this wasn't changing, that wasn't changing, he wasn't changing, I wasn't changing. What the hell? Anyway, so I was in Howe at this point, and I was talking to my food sponsor every morning about the same problems. And she never said anything. I mean, I was doing my writing, I was talking to her, but I was getting sick of hearing it. I was sick. And after having a disastrous Thanksgiving dinner with my stepdaughter and my husband last year, I went to the People Program. And I now have a sponsor in that program. I'm working the steps in that program. I'm in a big book. Imagine reading the big book from the point of view of the wife. You know, the wife, the family afterwards. You know, and it's a whole different thing. all I can say is each program has given me so much experience, strength, and hope. And with this last program, it just makes me feel like I've learned some compassion. You know, in the money program, which I'm also in, I'm a busy lady. In the money program and the food program, I was not really nice at first. I would say, if somebody would say, let's put all of the dinner on one check, and I'd say, no, I have to have a separate check. And I mean, I didn't know compassion. I know how to build a fence, but I don't know how to build it with compassion. And that's what the people relationship has given me. It's also given me perspective about my relationships with people, places, and things. And, you know, I don't disparage going out to dinner with certain people because they eat certain things. You know, it's helping me to keep on my side of the street and enjoy my side of the street and say, I hope you enjoy your side. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Mary, I want to ask you, before Sue speaks, part of the title of this panel is Practicing These Principles in All Our Affairs. So brilliant that you have the traditions. Would you mind right now reading the traditions to the group?
Okay. If I can find the first page with the summary. I should know them by heart. All right, I won't. Let's see. They don't have a summary page.
You know, and I do have them here, too.
That's okay. I'll just flip through.
Okay.
Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon CEA how unity. Tradition 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And it goes to Tradition 3. The only requirement for CEA HOW membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Tradition 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or CEA HOW as a whole. Tradition 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. Tradition 6, a CEA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the CEA HOW name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Tradition 7, every CEA HOW group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Tradition 8, Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HOW should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And Tradition 9, CEA HOW as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Tradition 10, Compulsive Eaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the CEA HOW name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Tradition 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
God bless our traditions. Will everybody please join me in giving a round of applause to Sue, who's going to lead right now and who's been organizing all of these panels.
Thank you. I'm Sue, and I'm a compulsive eater. Compulsive many other things, too. I just want... Thank you, Alexia, so much. This is my favorite thing to talk about, because I do have to practice these principles in all my affairs, and I get a lot of help doing that from many different programs as well, from our incredible sponsor who's here. So that's my little gift of this convention, is that I don't see her. She lives in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And just to say what an incredible experience it has been to organize these panels and to work on the committee with Gabrielle and Deborah over there, because for it's a miracle that we have worked so well and had so much fun and laughed so much, and that it has been something that I thought I could never do, but have had such a tremendous time in organizing and being with other people and spending so much time with other people and eating meals with other people. And also to say that I was severely triggered all day yesterday, and so I forgot about God. I forgot that God is in charge and that there's a much bigger source running this conference, that I'm not in charge, and that I wasn't grounded. I wasn't in my body, and I have severe disassociation, and I am often what I imagine the emotional sobriety workshop was talking about, when I am out of my body, and once I'm in a spiral and I've taken the first bite, I can't stop. And so I have to get right back to, it wasn't until I sat in the candlelight meeting last night where I grounded again, didn't remember that I needed a meeting, didn't know that I just needed to get the presence of God, hear the basics of a meeting, hear people stand up and hear about their abstinence, put my hand up and share that I was having a difficult time, and I'm having a great day today. And that is, you know, I... my memory of eating and my house story is only based in deception and dishonesty. My story isn't so much about what I ate and what I did, but my eating was secret. It was there was so much deception around it. There was so much shame about will I be caught, and the process of hiding it over and getting in and out, or trying to swallow while I was going from the table to the kitchen. And that shame that brought on the self-loathing, that brought on so much anxiety, and the secret world that I lived in has translated into all the areas of my life, and for so many years. My father died when I was very young. My mother grieved the death of my father. She could never, ever let go of that death. She grieved the death of my father for the rest of her life. And I just went off to save the nation and completely abandoned myself. My first program was C.A. Howe, and I came in because I went to a meeting that spoke about freedom from the bondage of self. And I knew at that meeting it wasn't the food for me that brought me in, although I'd struggled with my weight my whole life. But freedom from the bondage of self is the thing that I want more than I've ever wanted anything. No money, no man, no food has ever wanted the relief that I want from just getting out of myself. And the moments that I am out of myself, the moments that people have spoken about, that presence of mind, or that moment of clarity, or that moment of service when I'm out of myself, are the only happy moments of my life. The only time is when I am when I can view things, work, do anything where I just remove self and can either be of service or listen or participate and be present in my life. My story with money has always been about deprivation, and the deprivation that I had was even in my compulsive overeating. I never binged on delicious food. I binged on cold canned food, I think call it tinned food, and frozen things and leftovers, and I wasn't someone who went out, and I will now, because I've learned a lot more about deserving, if that's deserving, but I never ate in that way, and I've always felt pride in that I could live on $20 a week, and that I didn't need anything. My family didn't tell us that we that they can't meet my needs. They just said, we don't have any needs. You don't need anything. And as long as we don't need anything, then those people can have it. And so I lived my life never needing anything. It wasn't that my needs were not met. I just really didn't need anything. So I went out to see, identified with the have-nots, and I could completely see that I had nothing, but they had nothing too, and they had less nothing than me, and I never ever wanted anything. And with a lot of Power Recovery came the first things of people saying, what do you want? And the question of what do you want was worse than any question that I'd done in Power. I could write my inventories easily. I could write my character defects easily. But once it started to become in recovery and people were saying, what do you want? What's your favorite color? What do you like? What do you need? Was when I became completely paralyzed. That brought up all the trauma in my life. And I had to get help for trauma, and I've had to work on a lot of things that have recognized where I disassociate completely, where as soon as I'm asked to be in me, present in my body, and looking at what I need and not making your dreams come true, which I've made a career out of, then and now it's, but what if you're going to live your life and be the center of your life? Then I didn't know how to do that. I've got direction in every area of my life. I've got direction on how to not be in relationships that undermine me and that continue to make me feel like that. And I haven't been in a relationship for many years because I could never, ever go back to that kind of relationship. I still have to work on my self-esteem and my self-worth so that I can be with a healthy person and meet them in a healthy way. And because when I'm with a healthy person, that brings up my insecurities and my feelings of less than. But I don't want to be in a relationship that continues to perpetuate my self-loathing and hurts me in the way that I've been hurt from relationships. I've also had to learn in relationships, particularly with my friends, how to live and let live, which is truly let other people live their lives, which means my best friends, my family, that they actually have a right to live their lives, and I can't have any, I don't know what they're thinking, that my life is completely different to theirs, and the alternative to me allowing them to live their lives is that I have to go on and live my life. Me having to go on and live my life is paralyzing. I haven't known where to go with it. I also had a lot of help with understanding the idea of deserving. And the way that I understood the way of deserving wasn't first that I deserved to have property and prestige and things. It was about responsibility, that I had to be self-supporting by my own contributions, and that I had to have a past, present, and future where I could financially take care of my past, which is clear up the wreckage of my past, have a present life that involves emotional, spiritual, and personal things where I can treat myself, I can have the health care that I need, I can be safe in the car that I drive, I can enjoy lovely clothes, I can travel and be of service, I can be generous in my contributions, and that I can put money away for a future where I can have a prudent reserve that can take care of me and not live with that anxiety, where I have a financial security. When I left a job and had saved some money, and I got breast cancer, and I really was upset that the lump sum of severance that I'd got was now going to have to pay for my health care, and didn't understand at that time that basically that's what that money is for. That money is for a rainy day, and my sponsor said, this is your rainy day has come. That was my rainy day, and I don't owe any money on any of my medical treatment. The other thing about actually having treatment was it was the only time in my life that I've ever had boundaries, ever, was when I was so sick that I couldn't listen to what I didn't need people to say, and I couldn't take care of other people. I couldn't say, if you can't come and see me or you can't bring me anything, and you explaining, well, I'm so sorry that I haven't showed up for you. It was like, I can't hear that you haven't been able to show up for me. And when I needed to sleep, I needed to sleep. And it was such an amazing experience, because it was the only time that I actually did what was good for me, and I had to because I had no alternative. Now, how do I continue to do those things without having cancer? That's the way that that's how severe it was, that was the time that I started to take care of myself. The big recovery now is there are a few things that have happened that have completely shifted me and my whole perception. I'm quite scared of it. It's like being a newcomer in your first 30 days where you know something so different is happening. There's been a spiritual awakening and some big shift. A few months ago, I went home to South Africa. It's the first time I went in 10 years. And I hadn't gone for 10 years because I didn't know how to go. I didn't know how to go and see family. I didn't know how to go and be with all the friends and all the political involvement and everything that I had there. I didn't know how to do it. So the only way I knew how to do it was not to go at all. And this time I went and did exactly what I wanted to do. I went to a family wedding. I stayed with my family. I saw no one. We went shopping for the dress and we laid the tables. And I just had the most incredible just day by day. And it was the first time I experienced what it was to just flow with my life, just to take it one day, just to see how it was coming. And I had the most incredible time. And the second thing that's happened now is I just lost my job. This could have been the big job that was going to be my security for the rest of my life. It's the first time that I had security. It's the first time that I had benefits and all the, you know, savings and all sorts of things that I was getting from a secure job, and I was very seduced by it. Although it was a bad situation, I was very seduced by the benefits. But the incredible thing is first of all, I have savings. I was paid out because I knew how to negotiate. I'm getting unemployment because I have followed and filled out the forms and sent them every week. And I don't know what I want to do. And so this is the most exciting thing is I sat with my sponsor at breakfast this morning talking about I'm an event person and here I am doing an event, looking at the things that I like to do, looking at the things I don't like to do. Is this what I want to do? And she said, you have a perception of what you like to do. You don't even know what you like to do and what you could do. And that was like such a whole thing. It's like, should I do events or should I not do events? But there's a whole other piece that I haven't even begun to think about. So when people have said to me, you know, Sue, you're okay, you always land on your feet, I can say honestly, I've been 17 years in the program and I'm 54, and this is the only time in my life that I can say I really am on my feet. I don't need to land on my feet. I really am on my feet, and that's all I've ever wanted. I've never wanted anything else, just to feel like I'm in my body and on my feet. And that is why I'm having the best time, whether I've got a job or not. I'm just really grateful. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, panelists. Okay, we're going to open up the floor to Q&A. And if you'd like to ask a question to our panelists, please, there's a sign-in sheet that Ruth has. You'll sign it first before coming to the mic. Who would like to come up and ask a question?
Larry. You can do it afterwards, Larry.
Is there someone else too? Okay, so after Larry signs in, we'll have you sign in, so once he's finished. Perfect. So if you could just keep the flow going like that, that would be terrific. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Larry. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Larry.
After being in that program for a while, I'm just wondering what you would have to say in your experiences in being in a relationship with a significant other. How do you manage the mine, yours, and ours, especially when it comes to the money, when it comes to the food? How do you manage that? Because my experience has been, my first marriage, I was using credit cards, along with my wife who encouraged me, my ex-wife, that is. And we got into debt because of we were eating out big time. So how do you handle that, or how have you handled that in the past?
That's a good question, Larry. Thank you. And that's good, that the me, the yours, and the ours. And like one day at a time, you know, basically, you know, I stay married one day at a time. I do things one day at a time. And to do something for the rest of my life would be just too much. The thing is, and I want to thank the other panelists. I really got a lot out of both of your shares. And you know, like, Sue, like, what you were talking about in the area of, like, you know, just expressing what I need You know, what do I need? You know, and that area of deprivation, you know, because I like, you know, I'll just, I'm a man. I go to work. I got to do good to feel good. You know, I mean, okay, that I ground in and I go to work every day and I do what it is and I get seduced by the thing. And it's like, oh, you know, I need to, you know, I need to make sure that I get my car taken care of, or I need to take care of the things, or I'd like to go out to eat, or I'd like to do those things. But we have to be able to communicate, and that relationship is just, that's the thing that I have to work on. And you know, it's the small things, and it's not the big overall, the things that I have challenges with is I want to have the whole thing. I want the whole thing. And taken care of, so we don't have to worry about that thing anymore. And so I get challenged with that, yet it's about being able to listen to it's better to listen to, it's better to hear Franciscan prayer, you know, is better to understand than to be understood. And in another reading, they kind of mirror that. It's like, it's better to understand than be understood. I mean, it's because for a codependent, you get, it's better to understand than to be understood. I've heard, it's horrible for a codependent. You just get be a doormat. So, you know, it's a matter of, everybody has their right. If you're in this room, if you're out there, if you're listening to this, you have a right, you have a voice. And, you know, so many years in recovery, I feel like, oh, well, who am I? Who am I? I mean, you have your, I'll let you go do your thing, okay? It's your thing. And it's a recovery to say, you know, I hear you, but I need, you know, this would work best. How can we make this? Oh, I know that's a little long-winded, but thanks. Oh, by the way, fabulous guitar playing last night.
Thanks, Larry, for the question. The People Program, not that one in particular, but has taught me, I have some ground rules with my sponsor. First of all, I use my sponsor a lot in dealing with my marriage. And one of the things is a rule we have is we don't discuss anything controversial before 9 in the morning or after 9 at night. Those are the two times when we are explosive. And, I mean, that's our situation. I'm not saying it's everybody's. And then I have a little mantra I'm supposed to say when I'm triggered, which is at least once or twice a week. Keep it light and polite. And, you know, I guess that's part of the compassion I'm learning. But I'm also aware, just what David was saying about finding my own voice in the marriage or finding my own voice in a relationship with another person. And, you know, I really don't have a lot of experience at successful negotiations with people. And therefore, I have to use a sponsor right now. I'm just, here I am in recovery for many years and just finding out how faulty my system is in talking to my partner. And thank God I didn't have a relationship for 30 years, and I was working on myself. And, you know, it's that protecting myself that from hurt and abandonment, what we heard this morning. Anyway, I do think that there's room, and as far as the money goes, we set out at the very beginning. I was very active with a sponsor in DA at the time I got married and worked out how we wanted to handle our finances. I went to a number of workshops about relationships and money that helped. And one of them was to work with a third person, you know, however it is, because both of us needed adult supervision. We were both kind of screwed up. But my My husband happens to be very good with spreadsheets, so he sort of does that part of it. We both have a joint account now. I mean, we share a joint account, and we both have our personal accounts. Every month, he gives me his spreadsheet, and we go through it, and that's not always easy to talk about. And it's sometimes I want to pin him down on something at the wrong time of the day, and so we have to wait, and then we talk about it. But the whole going out to dinner thing can be a real disaster. Let me tell you. Money and food together. There you go.
My last relationship was 10 years ago. It was for 10 years with an alcoholic, and so I don't have much experience in having a healthy relationship around money. And although the first boundary, I said earlier that the boundary was when I got sick, but the first boundary was getting abstinent. And that was the first time ever that no matter what was going on in the relationship, I had to have my food. So whatever he wanted to do, whatever was happening, I had to eat 3 meals a day, and I had to get what I needed. So that was the beginning of me starting to say that I need something. I couldn't go to a restaurant where I could get nothing, or even if we got home, I had to go somewhere and I had to find the things that I needed. Now I don't debt no matter what, and that it means that I live within my means, which is getting honest. So the more I get honest, the more I live within my means, which is I'm not more than I'm supposed to be and I'm not less. I have much more than I've ever had before, but I do live within my means, and I hope for me that I'm looking for, I am stepping into my maturity. I'm stepping into growing up, and this is what I'm feeling with, that there is a certain point where I have to meet those responsibilities, which means I have to eat properly and I have to manage my money properly. I have to get to that point in my adulthood that I start to learn how to do that, no matter what relationships I have. I, too, was working in a big corporation where people went to fancy restaurants, and I would come away spending $100 on a meal where I really didn't have it. I didn't eat anything that anybody else was having. I don't drink. And so I spent way more money than anything that I should have. And it never feels good. There are times when I go and spend that and I really want to. I invest in it. I want to be there. I have no resentment about it. And I'm very happy to spend the money. So, thanks.
Hi, I'm Julianne. I'm a compulsive eater and bulimic and a serial 12-stepper.
Hi, Julie.
I want to thank you all for your sharing. It was really great. And I've heard a lot of stuff at this convention that's really helping me. But I guess I wanted to ask you, my problem is practicing this principle in all my affairs, especially with the most important people that I'm most close to, like my significant other. Not my son so much, but my boyfriend. And I do pretty well at work. I do pretty well in the meetings. I do a lot better with my parents. You know, my mom, too, I have some times where, you know, I like what I heard an hour or so ago, that if I take that break and make a conscious contact with God, maybe I can make something different come out of my mouth. Because sometimes I don't do that. I just let, you know, I let what my disease take over. I don't think about what I'm going to say. But so my question is, and this, you know, my boyfriend and I are really different. I spend money. I know there's always going to be more tomorrow. And he worries about how are we going to keep the house we have in like 30 years from now. It's like he's very particular with things. And maybe that's a good match to have that balance. But I just don't know how to work this principle in that relationship as well as I know how to work it everywhere else. And it seems like I should work it best with the person I'm closest to. So that's my question.
What was that Paul Abdul song, Opposites Attract? So, yeah, you know, and that's what I've been hearing is that, you know, it's the opposites. It's the opposite. The thing is, like, if we were both the same, it would be really boring, really boring. And I guess, you know, I mean, with the baby, that's really easy. That's, you know, I mean, I love being of service. And, that, you know, like just changing the diapers and everything, that is easy. You know, being of service when you know it's a service, and like, it's like my mind that is like, this person wants something completely different than what I want. So this is in my best, you know, when I go to my heart, is it, which brings it back to what Larry was saying, is like ours, and is there something, the win-win, is it possible that we can find something that is not my idea and not your idea, but be able to find something better, that's better than both of us can do, and we can both get what we want, and it's even better because in my mind I wanted to do this thing and she wants to do it this way and has this thing. But you know, if we're open-minded once again about it, and we can be honest, okay, this is what I need to do. It doesn't have to be exactly what I need. It doesn't have to be exactly what I want, but this is what I want at this moment, and be able to compromise and go for the win-win, you know? Why not?
That's an excellent question. And I have no easy answer. I don't know, but I will tell you, in my experience, I've had to decide what is my bottom line. What can I no longer live with? My husband has one of the ugliest statues you've ever seen on our piano. I hate it. It belongs in a bathroom, if that. But you know what? I've got bigger fish to fry than that. And, you know, it's trying to figure out, and I guess that's where the people program, Al-Anon, has helped me, trying to start, you know, through writing and doing my step work and looking at what I'm powerless over, you know, what's the last ditch, you know, that I can't handle? And, you know what, I'm still trying to figure it out because there's an assortment. And there are a couple things that I don't know if I can go on living with. My husband got this third cat in the house, and we were here talking about cats. This cat is a menace. It's attacking my other cats, and it, you know, but he loves this cat. And I thought last night, I'm trying to watch the Olympics, and these cats start fighting, and I thought, where's my serenity? How much of this am I going to take? And I laugh, but you know what? I'm going to have to ride the wave. That's the other thing. I have to ride the wave on some of these things to find out what's my bottom line. With the food, it's gotten really easy. He really respects this program. He really has come to respect it. At first, he made fun of it. But now, he goes and eats the trash that he wants to eat. I eat what I want to eat. Some people think we're really odd. But probably one or two nights a week, we enjoy a meal together because we can share. We find a common ground. And I think that's part of what being married is about, is finding those common grounds and then finding out what I can't stand anymore. And am I willing to go on living with this, especially the third cat? I know somebody.
I get just, you know, I, with all my relationships, I need adult supervision. and I have to reason it out with someone else. I have learned principles and slogans that have saved my life. Practice restraint. I run things by before I press send on a computer or before I make a phone call. I know the difference when I don't make the phone call and press send and the consequences. And when I phone my sponsor afterwards dealing with the consequence, she'll always say, I don't know why you don't call me before. Always. It's an age-old 17-year-old story. And I know the difference. I also heard this, you know, this is what we learn is the sentence, maybe you're right. So I get told, you say maybe you're right. Now, if you say maybe you're right, even when someone is blatantly wrong, you say maybe you're right, you have a lovely evening, and the table's not turned over, and you get what you want, and you haven't ruined the day, and how important is it really? Really, is the how really important is it? And I am watching people in healthy relationships that I hope to emulate, where I've watched people who do not say anything to their partners. They eat the way they eat. They say things the way they say things. And I'm watching. I would have said that. I would have done this. I would have said that now. And they actually rarely leave them alone to be. And I also have always wanted to be cherished in a relationship. And I think that when there is someone who does that, then my sponsor has always said too, when I said I'm so jealous of someone, and she said, when someone is honest, you won't have to be jealous. When someone meets your needs, then you won't be so needy. And so I think that that's where I have to ask for what I want and have someone who can meet my needs. So thanks. That's what I'm looking for.
Hi, everybody. I'm Shelley, bulimic compulsive eater in recovery. I have to say this. I want to thank my higher power that I call God, and I want to thank you. You're such a blessing for me, and thank you for all that I have learned today and continue to learn. My question is that I do go to the relationship program, and I've been in recovery in this program, thank you, God, one day at a time for a bit. And for me, I want to know how to keep my power when it comes to being with someone of the opposite sex, because I tend to, in relationships like that, give my power away. And the second part of that is, how do I, as my daughter calls me, I am the kind of person, because of the way that I was trained professionally, to be, as my daughter says, my Indian name is Ask Too Many Questions. But I'm really a listener, to be able to balance asking the questions and knowing what to say, and then also listening at the same time with finding that balance of, maybe I'm asking for a ton, but maybe I'm not saying it right, but those are the things that I really struggle with, that balance of being able to have that communication. You know, more balanced, and being able to ask, you know, it took me a long time in here, and to learn that finding my voice is a big deal, because I didn't have one growing up, you know. So finding that voice in a relationship, you know, what, how do you do that? And all the other things I ask. I ask a lot.
You say too much people like this, so like, next. No, I go to the relationships program, and I went because I have part of my gig that I do is that I get to work with people with compulsive behaviors in mental health, and that was a lot, but you know, when I started going to I will say that I've been sober from drugs and alcohol. On Wednesday it will be 9 years, and that is a blessing to all, everybody. I actually write letters to my old probation officer. It's amazing. But when I went to, they said that I had to go to a different 12-step meeting, instead, one that you didn't normally go to. So I said, okay, well, I guess I'll go to when I was going to school. They said, you have, so I went to Al-Anon. So I went to it, and it's like, I've heard Clancy talk about going to a food meeting and then seeing what he's gotten from that. So there's recovery everywhere. There is recovery everywhere. And um, the question is that basically finding your own voice is I only found my voice when it got painful enough. It had got painful enough because my mom kind of describes me as being like Ferdinand the Bull. I would like to sit there and watch it go by and participate. And you know, the thing is that if somebody doesn't respect your voice, then you need to be able to reevaluate on a day by day basis. Having a relationship is very, very challenging. And you know, having a voice is, you all have a voice. And if it's not right for you, to be able to take care of your food, to be able to take care of your money, to be able to, you know, if I'm not taking care of myself, you know, it only changes when it gets painful enough.
Finding your voice, let's see here, finding my voice right here on this microphone. I think it's practice, practice, practice. I really do. And I think, you know, that's why dating is really important, whatever kind of dating it is. You know, just watching yourself interact with the opposite sex in different ways, not only dating, but in your friendships with men. I think that's what you're talking about, the opposite sex, right? Okay. All right, that's my challenge. That was my challenge for 30 years in between this marriage, that marriage. I worked with in a profession where people would rather not hear my voice. And so I have to take care of finding people who I can be heard with. Even in that profession, I have found several people. But I think it takes being around people who really support you and appreciating the person you are and the voice you have, and not looking for people who are going to shoot you down and intimidate you and make you feel less than. And, you know, that comes from within. But for me, I didn't know how to do that. I needed support. I needed people to say, I understand what you're saying. And, you know, when I hear people laugh or smile, I hear when it's empathy, and I also hear when it's derision. And I try to surround myself with people who I care about and who care about me, whether they're in program or not. And, you know, they say God could and would if God were sought. And I think that's part of the way it is with relationships. So they're finding the right people.
You know, I am an addict through and through. And if I take the first compulsive bite, which means that if I met someone, things go so fast for me that I have never taken the time to get clear, to weigh and measure and to understand what I'm doing. That's the same in all my programs. I didn't understand until I heard the words vagueness, like Alexia spoke about, and being specific. I didn't really realize that being so specific about my food, like specific, it relates exactly to the same as in money, and I didn't realize it was the same in relationships. I don't do well with vagueness in relationships. I think I do. I think I can just be cool. But I actually do need to know where I need to stand. And if my sponsees say they're going to phone me at 7, I am a person who's waiting for the phone call. And I've spent so many years waiting in relationships, waiting. When people said, what were you doing? I wasn't watching TV or talking on the phone. I was waiting. I wait for my calls. If someone says they're going to call me, they have to call me. And I'm going to have to do that because I'm never going to be able to do that. I have to like start to get honest with what I need and not think I'm so hip and slick and can do these things. I also never had beginnings. I've never held hands and had the beginning courting part of a relationship. I just want to do the courting part before I'm in the middle, moved in, And I just want to see if I can try and experience that for the first time in my life, to see what it is to get to know someone and to see what it is to sort of just slow down. I have to slow down in all areas of my life. As I said, I just needed to sit at that meeting. I just need to slow down. And I hope that I meet someone who can do that with me.
That's our time. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Before you leave, can we just end briefly with the, well, we know how long it is, the Serenity Prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.